Dear podcast listener, before we get to our new episode, just a moment about what we do here at Latino USA and how you can help support us. So in the studio with me is Jeannie Montalvo. Hey, Jeannie.
Hey, Maria.
So what brings you joy about working at Latino USA?
I love the support for crazy ideas. And
you're smiling as you say. What would be the craziest idea you've brought to us this year?
Oh my gosh, so many. But Ima Sumac was in the works for probably like a year or two, and it finally saw the light of day. She's the Latino USA story. She had this amazing trajectory in the U.S., being Peruvian in the 1950s and carving a way and a space for her. And like, she embodies basically what the Latino experience is in this country. So that was a really fun story to kind of like take a look at it from all angles and her critiques and stuff like that.
You decided that for 2019, you wanted to create something new, which is, we love doing that at Latino USA. And so you actually took over a corner of our offices and put up a little studio to do these recording sessions called Live from Latino USA. So why did you want to do this? And what does it mean that you could do this, make a dream kind of happen at Latino USA?
I wanted to do this because it's important to highlight Latino artists and musicians. And a lot of times in these bigger sessions and studios, they don't often get a lot of Latino talent. They get some, but I think it's important if we're Futuro Studios and we're Futuro Media and we're Latino USA that we are highlighting that kind of talent, because that's what we do. And the fact that Futuro said, yeah, sure, go ahead and do it, is even more amazing, because it doesn't take a lot to make something happen. It just kind of takes love and dedication. And I feel like that is really the most important thing, that the kind of Futuro family embraces you and allows you to do. And it's been fun. We've had some really, really great musicians that have come through and played and been loud and made jokes. It's been good.
Well, thank you for all of the love that you bring to your work at Latino USA, Jeannie Montalvo.
Thank you, Maria.
So as we're getting to the end of the year, it's really a good time to think about contributing. And, you know, just think about all the great stories that we brought you in 2019. And so when you make an end of the year gift to your NPR station, you'll be supporting the stations and the stories that matter to you. So support Latino USA and support your local public radio station by donating today. Visit donate.npr.org/Latino USA. And thank you. Gracias.
So I'm in the studio today with producer Jeannie Montalvo.
Hola.
Hola, Jeannie.
So, Anta, did you watch the Latin Grammys like a month ago?
I didn't. What happened?
Well, a bunch of things happened, but relevant to today.
Yeah.
Lars Ulrich of Metallica presented Juanes with the Person of the Year Award. It's kind of like a lifetime achievement.
And on behalf of Metallica, I'm extremely honored to be here.
Did not know that's where you were going to go with this.
Surprise! But really, you can see Juan is kind of losing it on the video, but listen to him here.
I'm making music because of you guys. You guys changed my life.
That's very funny to me. For those who don't know who Juanes is, how would you describe his music? It's like
pop.
Yeah, it's like pop rock, but it's very like
camisa negra.
Yeah.
Tengo la camisa negra.
But I had no idea he was a huge Metallica fan.
Juanes is a huge metal fan, and so are a lot of people in Latin America. And that is what I'm going to be talking to you about today.
Ooh, mysterious. I didn't know you were into metal.
Funny story, because I'm actually not. But I am surrounded by Latino metalheads. My brother was into metal growing up. My neighbor is into metal and plays in a metal band. And what would life be like if I didn't marry someone who was also into metal?
Much quieter.
So speaking about my husband, Ernesto, who you know is from Peru, he was telling me the story the other day that got me thinking about this topic. It was about the time when one of his favorite bands, the British rockers Iron Maiden, came to Lima in 2009. You have heard of Iron Maiden, right?
I've seen the sweatshirts.
When Iron Maiden first announced actually their visit to Lima, people started making plans to come to the show. People started coming from other cities, even from Ecuador. People drove all the way from Guayaquil, from Quito, like you would see Ecuadorian flags in the crowd.
People came from other countries.
And it even transcended that there were some actual British Maiden fans that came just so they could see what it was like to see Maiden play a Blaze for the first time.
This is the first time in Peru.
So the day of the show, actually I went with my coworkers, and we all showed up for work in our Maiden shirts that morning. And we took the afternoon off, of course. And then the show began. And by the third or fourth song, I started getting a little dizzy. And after that, I don't remember anything.
Next thing he knew, he opened his eyes and he was at the emergency unit.
And the nurse gave me a bottle of water and told me I had to stay there for the next 30 minutes before I could go back to the show.
So after that, a guy on the bed next to Ernesto starts talking to him.
And he starts telling me his story, that he was epileptic and that the lights on stage at basically every show would trigger the seizures, and he knew it. But he was not going to miss any show because of that, you know? So he knew that all he had to do was just stand right next to this emergency unit, rock the hell out, and then the minute the seizures begun, he would be taken care of, which I think was the most rock and roll attitude ever.
That's so funny.
Rock and roll.
So then, as he was telling me this, Bruce Dickinson goes, "Scream for me, Lima." So I turn my head, I see that the nurse in charge of me was not looking at me, and I just ran back to the mosh pit.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, intense, right?
Like, I know that metal is really popular in Latin America, but I think it, like, a lot of people don't realize how big metal is.
Well, yeah, because the stereotypes of Latinos is that we're always listening to, like, tiki 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 salsa or, like, boom 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 reggaeton. What they never really associate with Latinos is heavy metal and its extreme fans. And maybe that's because the stereotype of metal, in the U.S. at least, is that it comes from a very white place. But metal is huge in Latin America. All right, Anto, listen to this. Spotify has this feature where you can see the top five cities where people listen to a particular band.
Okay.
So we're going to start with Iron Maiden. And you want to guess the top city?
Santiago, Chile.
That's a good guess, but you're wrong.
What city is it?
Sao Paulo, Brazil.
I was close.
You know what the second one is actually Santiago de Chile.
No way.
Yeah. And the third one is Mexico City. For Metallica's top five, Mexico City is number one. And the rest of them are all Latin American cities.
All of them?
Except for the number four, which goes to Chicago.
Really?
Yeah.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
But it might be all the Latinos in Chicago.
Maybe it is. Here's what James Hetfield of Metallica has to say.
All through South America has been always really good for Metallica. Very dedicated fans, you know?
The energy. And not only him, but Richie Faulkner of Judas Priest, another British metal band, said,
"The most extreme fans by country. I wouldn't say one country in particular. It's got to be down in South America. They're the most extreme."
I mean, you just have to see people in the stands at soccer games to understand that, like, Latin American fans are no joke.
They are. They do kind of fan hard.
Yeah. And nothing is harder than metal music.
Right. And since I am surrounded by metal, I started to think about that. Mainly because I don't fully understand it. And interestingly enough, the more people who I spoke to about this were like, "I love metal."
Okay, but why?
And that's exactly what we're going to unpack today, Antonia. Not only is metal this overwhelming phenomenon in Latin America, but Latin Americans have altered the course of metal history itself.
From NPR and Futura Media, I'm Antonia Cerejido, and today, The Breakdown, Heavy Metal Edition.
For all of you wondering, yes, that is a metal version of the Latino USA theme song that me and my husband made because we're extra like that.
Oh my God, I love how extra you guys are. Okay, so today we're talking about heavy metal, right? Like rock and roll times 100%.
You are correct, Anto. Heavy metal in Latin America is a true passion. Take this gentleman from Ecuador during the above-mentioned Iron Maiden tour.
Por el rock podemos pasar hambre, comida, necesidades, todo, pero el corazón de ser lo que nos gusta nunca nos quitarán. Hasta morir seremos heavy metaleros.
Till death, will be heavy metaleros. Okay, but before we get too far into the fanaticism, I really need you to answer this very basic question, which is, what is heavy metal music?
I'm really glad you asked that, because metal, on a basic level, is under the rock umbrella.
Got it.
But it usually brings heavily distorted guitars, wailing guitar solos, massive drum sounds, some sort of screaming.
What?
And often, there's an occult element. Things like images of demons, ghouls, and other dark, scary things. Some bands will paint their faces to look like corpses, think like Kiss, and stuff like that.
Cool.
It sounds like, for many people, that is noise, but it's not. It's, you have to be a very accomplished musician.
This is Rodrigo Sanchez from the Mexican guitar duo Rodrigo Gabriela. They made a name for themselves when they made acoustic covers of some of metal's greatest songs, like Metallica's Orion. Here's Gabriela Quintero of the group.
It's supposed to be completely not polished, the opposite of mainstream pop music. There's a community that is not just in Latin America, but all over the world, that to me, that's a truly world music.
Metal, it seems, is for everyone.
Abuelita! Abuelita!
Including your abuelita, like this one who became a sensation at the Chilean Metallica concert.
Wait, wait, so this is like an abuelita that showed up at a Metallica show?
Yep, that abuelita, she's a big metal fan. And there are rules to attending metal shows. Rule number one, in the mosh pit, there is etiquette.
Oh my God.
If somebody falls down, you pick them up. And rule number two, definitely buy the merch.
It behooves you to buy the merch.
This is Sasha Chenoy. He's my neighbor who I mentioned before, who is half Argentinian and lived in Mexico for many years.
Part of it is integral to the whole experience. You have to display your colors, because whenever you're in a public area, you can spot those people who are, you know, like-minded. Whether you like black shirts or slightly off black shirts.
Now I know that I can go attend a show.
We're both wearing black shirts, so clearly we got the memo. But Anto, before you can understand metal's appeal in Latin America, you have to understand the music's roots. At the end of the 1960s and early 70s in Birmingham, England, four guys were looking for an escape from their life as factory workers. They are Black Sabbath. And one of them was the young Ozzy Osbourne. Black Sabbath is arguably the beginning of heavy metal. The music grew out of the working class in England.
Once upon a time, there was no heavy metal music. There was just the factory landscape of the Midlands and the industrialized North, where the sounds and smells of metal manufacture hung heavily in the air.
And the legend says that guitarist Tony Iommi suffered an industrial accident and lost the tips of his fingers. Here he is speaking in a documentary.
As far as the hospital was concerned, I could never play again.
In order to play the guitar, he had to detune the strings to loosen them to make it easier to play, giving the guitar its gritty, heavy sounds.
Hold up. Is this story true?
It is not a legend. It is facts. Yes.
That is crazy.
I came up with another sound by tuning the guitar down. I wanted more gain, a dirty sound, more aggressive and more raw.
It's often said that the massive drum sounds are kind of reminiscent of what you would hear in a factory, like heavy machinery and stuff like that.
Okay.
The lyrics often tackled themes of war, social issues, the supernatural, and as they put it, the timeless conflict between good and evil. They were the product of their time. It was a time right after the 1960s British rock wave kind of swept across the globe with this sometimes rosy rock and roll when it came to the early Beatles.
I wanna hold your hand.
To a more bluesy Rolling Stones.
Well, this could be the last time.
And metal was the voice that spoke against the establishment. Something even more rebellious than plain old rock and roll. Something angrier, something louder. In Britain, it grew out of the mood of the suppressed youth at the time. It became an outlet for all the frustrations and things you couldn't say.
Okay, so what was happening in England at the time that led people to feel oppressed?
Kick the door down. All were aware that Britain was in its worst economic crisis for more than 40 years.
So after World War II in Britain, there was a boom in manufacturing. But then, during the 1970s oil crisis, there were massive layoffs. Wages couldn't keep up with the staggering inflation.
People don't realize that as well as the 3 million or so already fully unemployed, there's hundreds of thousands more of us.
And by the end of the 70s, that's the infamous winter of discontent, workers and trade unions began to strike. And that anger came out in metal. Some of the music had an anti-war message, like Black Sabbath's War Pigs.
In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine.
And Iron Maiden talked about colonialism and Run to the Hills.
White man came across the sea. He brought us pain and misery.
But the music wasn't necessarily political. Whatever it was intense. It was music designed to make people feel powerful. And that sentiment spread to the U.S., to Finland and Scandinavia, and to Latin America.
Okay, so in the U.K., it was a time of mass unemployment. The working class was really struggling. But what about Latin America? What was happening there politically when metal got so big?
Well, every country is dealing with something. There's the dictatorships of the 70s, like Pinochet in Chile.
Esta nunca ha sido dictadura, señores. Esta es dicta blanda.
And the junta in Argentina.
Al pueblo de la nación argentina. La intervención de las fuerzas armadas.
Racism, poverty, foreign interventions. Pablo Escobar is in Colombia.
Se busca a Pablo Escobar Gaviria.
And, like in the UK, Latin America's youth found an outlet for their anger in metal.
The message is open your eyes, try to think for yourself. We don't need to trust politics.
This is Cote Hurtado. He co-runs RockAccess.com, a digital magazine that started in Chile dedicated to rock and metal across Latin America. And Cote was also the producer of a very successful and popular show in the 90s. MTV Headbangers was a show that started in 1987 in the USA and played music videos and interviews from the decade's heaviest of heavies.
Yes, it's the Headbangers Ball, and I'm Dee Snider. And right now,
when MTV Latino decided to open their operations in South America, Latin America, you can see in the few shows that were coming to Latin America were huge. Iron Maiden, Kiss, Ozzy, Scorpions, the impact of Metallica, of Pantera.
So seeing the big audience at metal concerts, MTV decides to bring Headbangers to Latin America. And they ask Cote to produce it.
I believe the first 2 years, it was the by far the most viewed, the most letters, facts. It was the most request show.
And even before that, metal bands were popping up in Latin America in the late 70s and early 80s.
What are the local Latin American bands that get really big?
There's definitely way, way, way too many to discuss in this episode, but here's a few. In Argentina, there's V8 and Riff. Then, in the mid-80s, Kraken from Colombia. Side note, while we're in Colombia, did you know that the Young Juanes actually started in a metal band called Ecchimosis?
Ah, it's coming full circle.
That is why Lars Ulrich of Metallica giving him an award was such a big deal, because it was his idol and that is where he started.
Now it makes sense. Okay.
But perhaps the biggest metal country in Latin America of all is Brazil. According to the Encyclopedia Metallum,
that's not real.
It is 100% real. Brazil has the largest number of metal bands in Latin America. But the biggest thing to come out of Brazil was the game-changing global phenomena that was and is Sepultura.
I think it was kind of the condition. We were very poor. And we didn't have much money, and we hated our job. We worked in factories, me and Igor, and worked like shoe factory and hat factory, and we hated.
This is Max Cavalera, founding member of Brazilian band Sepultura, talking about why he and other Brazilians were attracted to metal.
That music was like perfect for a third world pissed off kid. It was like the best, you know, you You come home after work pissed off, you hate your boss, and then you put some Venom and you put some Hellhammer and it's perfect. It's like the best music.
Greetings from the Dawn War!
And these pissed off, working class Brazilian kids ended up changing the sound of metal all over the world.
Coming up, Sepultura and its massive impact on metal. Stay with us, no te vayas.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card, you can earn 5% back at Walmart online, 2% at Walmart in-store, restaurants and travel, and 1% everywhere else. When you want all that, you need the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. What's in your wallet? Terms and exclusions apply. Capital One N.A.
Support also comes from Sony Music Latin, presenting the Latin Grammy-nominated reggaeton superstar Ozuna and his newest album, Nibiru. With over 30 million monthly Spotify listeners and 13 billion YouTube views, this highly anticipated third studio album follows a string of collaborations with Cardi B, Rosalia, Nicki Jam, J Balvin, Akon, and many more. Make sure to listen to Nibiru, available now.
We're wrapping up 2019 on Pop Culture Happy Hour by looking at everything we saw and heard this year and choosing just 15 favorite things. Could be a song, a moment, a movie, anything we think is the best of the best of the year. Here are picks on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
And we're back. Right before the break, we had just established how metal reached Latin America.
Right. Metal was somewhere for people to voice their frustrations over the sociopolitical issues going on in their respective countries. And now we're going to hear about how Latin America changed metal history and even helped establish a whole new subgenre of the music.
I'm Max. I'm Andreas.
I'm Igor.
I'm Paul.
We are Sepultura, and you're watching to MTV Headbangers Ball.
Through the Brazilian band Sepultura.
The best mosh pit in my life was during the Sepultura gig.
Heaviest, thrashiest band in the feast.
I'll never forget Rata Mahata by Sepultura.
Right before the break, we heard from Max Cavalera, co-founder of Sepultura. And the way he tells it, he wasn't actually into music in the beginning.
Everything really started when we saw Queen. Queen playing Brazil in 1981. Before that, me and Igor, we were really only into football, and it was mesmerizing. It was blown away. I remember me and my brother went to the local shop and bought cassettes of Queen and Kiss. And I think we became rock and rollers right there on the spot.
In the 1980s in Brazil, it was the beginning of democratization, and there was a lot of upheaval in the country, along with an economic crisis. And just like Black Sabbath in the UK in the 70s, Max's surroundings were part of what drew him to the music.
The violence of the country mixed with the poverty, mixed with the corruption, attracts people to like metal. They need something to fight that corruption, poverty, oppression. We took hold of that music, became something that we could count on it to get through, almost like a weapon.
Max and his brother Igor started Sepultura in 1984 in their hometown of Belo Horizonte.
It's a small scene, especially where we're from. São Paulo is the big city where there was a big scene of metalheads, and Belo Horizonte was smaller, and it's a really conservative, religious kind of city. There's churches on every corner.
This is another important point we haven't mentioned about Latin America. Much of Latin America is pretty conservative, primarily Catholic, so the youth who grappled with the church's teachings or conservatism found metal as an outlet as well.
It was a way to rebel against the church.
We took pictures in front of churches, in cemetery. We loved the way we dressed. We loved that we wear black shirts and we didn't look like what society wanted people to look like. We were like black sheep, and we knew that and we're proud of it.
Max mentioned earlier they were listening to bands like Hellhammer and Venom, who were pioneers of black metal, an extreme kind of metal big in the Nordic countries that was associated with Satanism and even church burnings. And actually, side note, the Catholic Church in Latin America in at least one case did go head-to-head with metal. It was in 1992 in Chile.
Típicamente aparece siendo un grupo que promueve conductas relacionadas con el satanismo.
They put pressure on the government to ban the group from performing, claiming their music was satanic, so the show got canceled.
They actually canceled the show?
Yep.
And that, my friends, is the power of the Catholic Church in Latin America.
And Iron Maiden is way less extreme than these bands that we were just talking about. What the church didn't understand is that a lot of metal fans weren't real Satanists. A lot of people just think all the dark imagery is cool.
We went to it was this kind of graveyard, and we found a grave that was open and there was a bunch of skulls in it. And so we stole one of the skulls. And then we were walking home and we had the skull in our backpack. And I told my friend, I cannot bring that skull home. My mom will kill me.
Conservative or not, I'm pretty sure my mom would kill me too if I came home with a skull.
Very rock and roll. So how did Sepultura become the most famous metal band in Latin America?
Sepultura makes a conscious decision to speak English, right?
At the beginning, we were kind of criticized in Brazil. People did not like that. They thought, because a lot of bands sang in Portuguese, but we kind of wanted, always our goal was to be international, to go to the world, you know? So if you want to do that, you have to do it in English.
Their first albums created a buzz in the metal world. And in 1991, they release Arise and embark on a tour for 2 years.
Thank you!
And on this tour, something happens to Sepultura. Max has said in an interview that it was the first time that they saw the world, and it gave them perspective on what it was to be Brazilian outside of their country. He said, quote, "We were still writing lyrics that were very heavy metal, very based in fantasy. But now we began to get more social and political," end quote. And so, in 1993, they put those politics in their next album, Chaos AD, which took the band from underground to a household name. But it's the album after that, in 1996, which really cements their legacy and ends up having a really big impact on metal around the world. It was called Roots.
I think kind of we threw the heavy metal rule book out of the window and said, there's no rule, we do whatever we want. I think it was like mixing Brazilian percussion with metal.
For example, on one of their songs called Rata Mahata, they collaborated with the famed Brazilian percussionist Carlinhos Brown.
Nobody knew if it was gonna work or not. But we were so confident in it.
On another song, you can hear the guitars mimicking the sound of the traditional Brazilian instrument, the berimbau. Do you know the berimbau?
Is that the one that sounds like a little dog yelping?
No, that's the cuíca. This is the berimbau. And here's Roots.
Wow, cool.
Very cool.
And then I had the idea to record with the original music of Brazil before samba, before bossa nova, before all that, which is the real, real people from Brazil, the Brazilian Indians.
They collaborated with the indigenous tribe, the Xavantes. To Sepultura, it was a way to embrace what Brazil had to offer.
The identity with your country, and it was kind of like embracing the roots of your country, but not really nationalistic, not really patriotic. You know, Brazil is full of bad stuff. You know, there's like corruption and poverty and crime. And so we kind of like look to the other side of Brazil, the things that we were proud of it. And that's the music side, you know, with the percussion, the beauty of it. So I think this is why this record became so important, like letting other nations, other people embrace their own roots. And it worked. We found out that the album was really well received all over the world, especially countries like France. They really, really loved the record right away.
Not only France, but across the globe, the impact of Roots was felt. The album dropped in March of 1996, and it is certified gold status both in the US and the UK. The band became a sensation. Here's Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters randomly bringing up his love of Sepultura recently on James Corden.
But you know what's crazy? One of my favorite heavy metal bands of all time is from Brazil.
Really?
This band called Sepultura.
Wow, listen to the people Sepultura. Cheering.
One of the crazy things they did, they made this album called Roots, and it was like, Roots! But they incorporated crazy Brazilian instrumentation into
really
like
cool.
The heaviest music you've ever heard in your life. It kind of like changed the game. It was the heaviest thing ever.
Even Bjork is a fan.
I really want to see Sepultura. I still haven't seen them.
And Rodrigo from the guitar duo we heard earlier has this take.
To me, Sepultura set the bar. I think the fact that they came from Brazil made them even more powerful. And that blend of tribal elements, they went so well with metal.
And that sound becomes a staple of what's known as nu metal. Nu metal is a subgenre that took over the 90s. It's a mix of rap and heavy metal with lots of rhythmic breakdowns. Think like Linkin Park and Korn. Bands were listening to Sepultura's mix of Brazilian percussion and metal and putting that in their music. Okay, Antonia, let's do some ABing, shall we? Are you ready
okay.
for this?
Yes, I'm excited.
This is Korn's track, Adidas. And now listen to Sepultura.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I totally hear it.
Incubus.
Oh, my God.
Incubus actually started as a pretty hard-rocking metal band as well.
No, they did not.
Take a listen.
Okay.
That's Incubus. This is Sepultura.
So I hear the influence specifically in the percussive nature of these songs. It's like...
Yeah. In Latin America, they influence bands like Animal from Argentina... Criminal from Chile. And Puya from Puerto Rico uses Afro-Caribbean rhythms to bring a different swing to metal as well. Sepultura gave Latin America a sense of pride, like, okay, they can do it, so we can too. But there's more,
okay.
Because The Who, a Mongolian throat metal band, also said Sepultura is one of their influences for their brand of throat-singing tribal music fused with metal.
Oh my God, I want to hear this. Whoa. Oh, I totally hear it.
The original lineup of Sepultura split in 1996 right after that groundbreaking album, Roots. 23 years later, they set the bar really high and turned the world's gaze to the metal coming out of Latin America. They broke the mold for what metal was supposed to sound like by creating a completely new sound, a sound that came out of their reality and that embraced the beauty of their country. Here's Max Cavalera again.
I often say music saved my life, and I believe that's totally true because a lot of other people that we knew, friends, got involved in drugs and cartels, and they got killed or they went to jail for a long time. And those options were really close to us, but we stick with music, and that was the best decision we made.
So, Jeannie, after breaking down metal, Have you come around on this music? Are you going to be a metalhead from now on?
That's a big no.
Okay.
I still do not share a love of metal, but I do understand it a little more. And my biggest takeaway is how metal can really unite people, no matter what your background is. It kind of gives people the freedom to be angry.
I mean, everybody deserves to be angry every now and then.
And if you look at the numbers,
according to the Encyclopedia Metallum,
our favorite Encyclopedia Metallum,
there are over 100,000 metal bands in existence across the globe.
Honestly, after hearing the story, I'm not surprised.
Right.
Metal is everywhere.
Metal is everywhere.
For everybody.
Metal is the true world music.
World music.
Antonia, I have one more thing.
Okay.
You and the world know that I'm a mom.
Yes.
And I was tipped off while I was doing this story to this heavy metal band for kids.
Oh my God.
Called Heavy Saurios.
So cute. Quiero leche. Quiero leche?
Yeah. It's a bunch of dinosaurs who sing about important things like wanting milk and such. And so now you and your kids can bond over heavy metal.
Hell yeah. All right. Thanks, Jeannie, for bringing us all of this heavy metal mayhem. And for those of you who want to know more about the metal coming out of Latin America, go to our specially curated Spotify playlist with a ton of metal for your enjoyment at LatinoUSA's website, latinousa.org. This episode was produced by Jeannie Montalvo and edited by Marlon Bishop. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Sofia Paliza Carr, Maggie Freeling, Janice Yamoka, and Elisa Escarce, with help from Joanne de Luna. Our senior editor is Fernanda Camarena, fact-checking by Amy Tardiff. Special thanks to Ernesto Lugar. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Our digital team includes Julio Ricardo Varela and Amanda Alcantara. Our interns are Adriana Tapia and Juan Diego Ramirez. Our theme music was composed by Senia Rubinos and adapted this week by Ernesto Lugar and Ginny Montalvo. If you like the music you heard on this episode and want to learn more about metal in Latin America, stop by latinousa.org and check out our very special Spotify playlist this week. Our executive producer is Maria Hinojosa. I'm your host this week, Antonia Cerejido. Join us again next time, and in the meantime, you can find us on social media. Ciao!
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.
There's definitely way, way, way too many in this podcast, but here's a few. Nope, that's not. There's obviously too many in this podcast. There's too much metal.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, and next time on Latino USA, How I Made It with guitar duo Rodrigo y Gabriela and their Grammy-nominated new album, Metalvolution. That's next time on Latino USA.